Welcome to the Enabled Disabled Podcast. I'm your host, Gustavo Serafini. I was born with a rare physical disability called PFFD. My journey has been about self-acceptance, persistence, and adaptation. On the show, we'll explore how people experience disability, how the stories we tell ourselves can both enable and disable, how vulnerability is the foundation for strength, and why people with disabilities can contribute more than we imagine. I hope that leaders, companies, clinicians, families, and friends will better understand our capacity to contribute to the world and help enable us to improve it. Laura Robb is a writer, poet, and currently is pursuing a degree in theology. I had a lot of fun speaking with Laura. She reads some of her poetry, and we discuss what the poems meant to her. We also dive into her ideas about community and acceptance, both inside and outside the church. Laura also shares insights into her writing process, what drew her into becoming a writer, which, as an amateur writer myself, I always find fascinating. I hope you find your own nugget of insight in this episode, because there are a bunch throughout. For me, it was refreshing to read and discuss some of Laura's amazing poetry and see how closely I understood the message she was trying to convey. We have an exciting announcement. We have activated a recording feature on our website where you can ask past guests questions as well as future guests. If we get enough questions for past guests, we'll invite them back on the show to answer your questions. Stay tuned to the newsletter, where we'll be previewing future guests and giving you the opportunity to ask your questions ahead of time. Just go to www.enabledisabled.com and press the start recording button to leave us your questions. Laura, thank you so much for being here and for taking the time. I'm really happy we connected.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Absolutely. So let's get started. I would like, if you can, for you to read a poem from your book, Beyond Limits, Longings, Love, Loss. So could you please start us out with Stifling the Sweet Self?
Sure. Here we go. The world around me stares, not quite knowing what to say. Young ones and old, all have spoken strange words, words of unawares, words that speak deeply to me, revealing the heart of their soul. Such moments I do recall from my earlier years, stifling the sweet self. But I have come to understand how those awkward words brought a new strength, burning a desire to lay bare what is behind my blue eyes and under this red hair.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. So can you talk a little bit more about that poem? Just what stifling the sweet self. So the sweet self, is that a metaphor for your childhood self?
I think the sweet self is more about my full self of who I am as a person. I realized, just comparing my adulthood self to my childhood self, I didn't really feel like I was always living fully with who I was in comparison to childhood versus adulthood. And I think my journey through adulthood helped me to become more fully myself and see the differences when the times where I didn't feel comfortable with being who I am and the times where I do feel comfortable with being who I am.
And so was the stifling of the sweet self coming from the words that other people would say to you or not say to you? And how much of that also was a part of the own story that you were telling yourself, your own like inner narrative growing up? Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, it was a little bit of both. I think growing up, I didn't pay attention to disability a lot. I grew up with my household, my parents and my brothers. We just dealt with the disability aspect without really addressing it, like to ask hard. I never really asked hard questions. It was just a matter of fact. They treated me as a normal person. I was my brother's sister and I was my parents' daughter. I mean, we had appointments and I had physical therapy growing up, but, and I also had the same school community for most of my childhood and same church community. So I didn't really face a ton of rejection within my community. And then as I grew up and became more involved and just more out and about in public, I would notice people staring at me in grocery stores or making strange comments or parents not really wanting their kids to ask me questions or just all the what happened to you or can I pray for you kind of thing that I didn't really ask for or want. And I think those really just stood out as moments that I feel like I can't be myself in those moments because people want me to be different. They want to change me. They think I'm broken when I don't feel like I am.
No. I can relate to that. But those moments where, you know, the people are staring or saying, you know, like you said, saying strange comments. Did you feel, you know, like, did you feel, not that you should, but did you feel a responsibility or like in yourself to bridge that gap with those people? Or did you kind of like, you know, how did you think about it then? And how do you feel about it now when it happens? How has that changed in your life?
Yeah, I think when it was first happening, it would catch me off guard and I wouldn't know how to respond. I think my introvert side would freeze and I wouldn't know what to say. I would just kind of like, sure, you can pray for me or okay. And then the person would often disappear by the time I had other thoughts or either I would have new thoughts once I got home. But now that I've become a writer and I process all of these experiences through my writing, I think I have more access to thoughts about how I would respond differently nowadays. And I do feel more of my calling is related to being that type of bridge.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I think I want people to understand too that disability is just a part of being a human. And I think that's where my growth has happened.
Absolutely. And I'm sure, like for me, I had similar experiences as you as a child where, like, you know, it was my disability was a matter of fact, and I had my friends and I had the people that I was close to, and I always had like a good core group of people, no matter, you know, as I grew up, even when I changed schools, which I did a lot. And then as I got into my late teens, I started to question, like you said, ask those hard questions and really confront myself. Mm-hmm. When you look back on your childhood and growing up and having that stability and people treating you as a person, that probably helped you a lot, right? Like that gave you a foundation to build on as you went into that questioning period and into doing this, all the hard emotional labor of self-reflection mm-hmm. and figuring out who you wanted to be in the world, right?
Yes. And my facing the hard questions didn't happen until my later 20s, when naturally a lot of your friendships and relationships change with people moving away, or just their relational status has changed. And I was still in the same place outside of my years of going to college. I returned to my hometown. I stayed in the same community, but much of the surrounding community changed. So I suddenly had to figure out why I wasn't really making new friends and what were the barriers. And that's where my disability became a bit more apparent to me as I tried to sit with these questions and I sought counseling for the first time to try to get through that hard phase.
And what were some of the things that changed inside of you that helped you, you know, find yourself and you know, rediscover communities and friendships? And, you know, what was that process like for you?
Yeah, part of it was helping, like, just realizing the perspective from the other side as far as what is it like for somebody to meet me, because my disability is very visible. I often, I'm in my wheelchair when people meet me at church, which is where a lot of my community would happen. And so there are a lot of assumptions about not me not being able to take, like, to walk or move, do things outside of my wheelchair. And so my mind shifted into the ideas of, okay, well, these newer friends that I'm meeting, what might they be thinking, or what do I need to do to make them more comfortable, or what questions might be going through their minds? And it actually, my journey, part of my journey was teaching preschool Sunday school for a few years. And the kids are very open with asking questions. And they ask me periodically different questions about my disability. And around the same time, I was becoming a blogger. And that actually opened up my mind to set up a series of questions and answers, a blog series. So I invited friends and community to submit questions about disability. It was a Ask Me Anything kind of series. Mm-hmm. And it was the first time I really gave my community the space to be honest about what they wanted to ask me. And several friends who had known me for several years said they didn't know how to ask me certain questions, even if it was really simple, because disability, even within the church, it's not really a topic that's discussed very often or very well. And I was realizing that as a writer, I felt responsible, or like I needed to bring to light some of these experiences and help those conversations get started.
That's beautiful. That's beautiful that you held that space. And I like the way you frame that, because there are some disability activists out there who say, well, you know what, it's not my responsibility as a person with a disability to always, you know, to bridge those gaps. It's my business. And if people mm-hmm. want to know me, they can get to know me. And I think those are fair. That's a fair position.
Mm-hmm.
But my heart and the way I think about my life is more similar to how you've approached it, which is it's important to have connection. It's important to be seen and be heard and understood as human beings. And yes. Why shouldn't we take that first step and hold that space open for people to understand an experience that doesn't define us, but is still there, right? It's still a part of us.
Yeah. And I think once I opened up the invitation, then it became a more reciprocal thing. Like my friends that knew me at the time, those relationships became deeper. They understood a bit more of my life in the day to day. And that way they could become more of an advocate with me. They came alongside me. Once they understood even logistical things about how to plan time to hang out with me, they could take on more of that role as well, as far as inviting me and helping me to navigate. Okay, well, if this place or if your house is not accessible, can I park my wheelchair in your garage, or can you or your husband carry me into your house? Those kind of details. It's like less of a burden. It's not really a burden. It's just, I spend a lot of energy in my mind trying to plan those details. And so it's a comfort and a freedom to just be able to sit back and be in that relationship with the person who understands those details at the same time.
Absolutely. And that's part of what makes us, right? That's part of the, just the idea of any relationship, any connection, is understanding, you know, the things that we all crave and need as people, mm-hmm. right? And some of them are very idiosyncratic or very specific to us as people, mm-hmm. but we all have them, right? We all mm-hmm. have things that help us feel more comfortable, help us feel more social, help us feel more connected. So I think the ability to express that and take the time again to open that and open open that book, so to speak, and have it be something inviting for people, I think mm-hmm. It's fantastic. I would also, I know that you started seminary, right? And you're studying that. And I think that's really, really interesting as somebody who went to divinity school. I think that the idea of faith is, clearly it's important to you. It's important to me too, in a different way. But can you talk a little bit about why you think the church, you know, the Christian church has not embraced disability or has not connected with it, and what's happening, what's changing in the theological space that you're getting involved in?
Yeah, I think it's growing in the past 10 years as far as newer people going to seminary and studying theology. There are more conversations happening with the topic of disability next to theology. I think it's just something that's been pushed to the side. It's not seen as important. But people with disabilities are one of the marginalized groups in society. And in my faith tradition, Jesus was like, he went to the margins. He cared for the people on the margins. And I think there's a growing culture within the disability community and theology community that's trying to bring more light into that topic. And I think the church, they can do a really good job for short-term disability experiences or sicknesses, or if there's, say, a natural disaster or some sort of death in the family. I think that the church as a whole knows how to care in those situations, but it's the tricky area is when it's a chronic, ongoing, lifelong condition. I don't always think the church knows like how to teach. I was born with my disability, so it will be really good to hear the church bring it into topic as far as, or into conversation as far as like, how do I live with my disability well without wanting to pray for my healing when I'm not asking for that. That's not part of my request. And as far as not leaving it up to the afterlife, like eternal life, when our bodies are going to be changed and resurrected, I think there's that middle ground that the church is missing.
How can we live more fully and, you know, actualize our own potential, whatever mm-hmm. that is, right, within the lives that we're leaving, the lives yeah. that we're living? Yeah.
But my perspective is we all have these different limitations, and I wear mine on the outside. So anybody who meets me sees my physical limits. So in the Bible, there's different verses that talk about like how we can have God's strength in our weakness, and we're all a part of the same body, even though we have different gifts. So I think there is a movement towards helping the church see people with disabilities as important to the church spaces.
Right. As having hopefully different forms of strength, right? It's so easy to equate strength with something physical. It's so much deeper and so much more multifaceted than that.
Yes, yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And that's where it's important to get to know the person beyond what you might see it when you meet the person.
As a writer, like, again, I haven't finished your book, but it's really clear to me that you are not holding anything back, that we're seeing a very, you know, deep and honest part of yourself in these poems. What helped you have that courage to take that step and make that leap of faith?
Yeah, it was definitely a growing process in a number of years. Part of it was starting with my counseling journey when I was turning 30, just moving through those hard questions, finding strength with my faith, finding that community and letting, like, watching it grow and deepen. So I think living through a season of really deep community where I felt what it was like to have the thriving life. This is all, of course, before the pandemic. And just being accepted as I am, as Laura, and not just as a person with a disability, and having that space where I can be myself without having to do work or advocate or do any of those like hard, tiring types of things. I think just it goes back to having that community, that belonging of like that space of belonging. I was able to just live deeply in those times, and my writing comes from my experiences.
Were you nervous about sharing it so intimately though? Like, was that something that you thought about? Like,
Oh yes, definitely. Yeah. Like all throughout my writing time, all these years, I'm always quite nervous about my openness and my sharing of my writing, but I feel like it's my calling to be open and vulnerable in these places. And there's usually a time where I reflect on things before I write about them publicly. It's just that balance of living, reflecting, and then writing.
Do you ever just write stream of consciousness without that reflection? Or is that more like, that's more journaling?
Yeah, I do have a journaling habit. So that's more for my private writing time. It helps me to just bring order to my thoughts and understanding to my experiences. And I think also my writing, I think it's important to show the humanity side of people with disabilities. I think that's also where my writing comes from. I want the world to understand, as a person with a disability, I'm still human at the core. Like, I have the same hopes, dreams, emotions, experiences, all of those things. And it needs to come out in writing so that people can understand it.
Yeah, but you're also expressing it uniquely, right? There's no one who can write in your voice, in your way, and have your, like your unique skill set that you've crafted, right? This openness, this willingness to be vulnerable. Like, you are, it's your expression, it's your contribution to the world as well.
Yeah, thanks. Yeah. It's been a growing process. Sometimes I told God, no, I don't want to do this, but then he kept telling me, you gotta do this.
I think it's fantastic that you're doing it. What can you tell? So for the audience who's interested, and I'm interested too, like, who are some of the leading theologians who are exploring this space of disability that we can read up on?
Yeah, a few of them come to mind. There's Bethany McKinney Fox. She wrote a book called Disability and the Way of Jesus, where she talks about the different healing narratives in a way that helps churches to think about how to approach them from a disability perspective in a way that is not just about praying for somebody to be healed. It's like honoring the disability experience and asking people like how they want to be prayed for or different things. That's one of them. Another one would be Thomas Reynolds. He writes a book called Vulnerable Communion. Let's see. There's another one by Eric Carter. He talks about including people with disabilities in faith spaces and what that can look like practically. There's also other names I can name, or John Swinton.
And thematically, it sounds like it's all, you know, it's different focuses, but the theme seems to be, how can we see people with disabilities as people, right? As human beings, how can we give them the space to tell their stories and share their experiences and be inclusive of that and understand the wider, that there's more to them than just a disability. That seems to be what the general theme is about for all these writers. Would you say that's accurate?
Yes, and the importance of bringing people with disabilities into the church spaces. How, if you don't have people with disabilities in your churches, then you're missing an important group of people. Yep. And if you look up a conference called the Institute on Theology and Disability, they have a lot of resources and a lot of connections to theologians and disability topics.
Thank you for sharing that. Mm-hmm. Do you have a favorite theologian, by the way?
I don't know. There's another one that came to mind, Deborah Creamer. She writes a lot about limits and how humans have limits and that's a normal part of life. I think that really resonates with me and my experience with my disability.
Yeah. Question for you on your book that I'm trying to figure out why you ordered it this way. Because mm-hmm. it's limits, longings, love, and loss. Why did you choose to end with loss?
Well, it's actually like part of my journey with writing, with life, with growing as a person. My story is kind of bookended with loss. So I had some loss in our family, and then I didn't know how to process my grief at the time, and I started writing poetry. So that was a catalyst for me becoming a writer. And I think loss is such a unique human experience. Like, everyone experiences loss. There's so many kinds of loss. It's like losses of family members, but through death, it can be loss of relationships. It can be loss of dreams. I think we all as humans experience that in some form. And in a lot of ways, our response to that loss kind of guides our journey to what is next and how we process it. And I think to me, that was also an eye-opening season for me to go through the loss and just understand, how do you move through loss? So the four chapters of my book represent the four seasons of life that I went through. And it was, first was limits, where I faced the hard questions about my disability. And once I moved through that process, I could have the courage to name my longings that I wasn't really comfortable talking about in public. And then I could understand what it really was like to give and receive love within a deep community. And then it brought me back to loss, when different things happen in life and you lose family members or just some of my dreams, they fell apart and relationships fell apart. And that's happened. That's what happens in life.
I think we can agree that it's really important what you said. The way we process loss changes so much of our experience and who we are as people. And to have the courage to actually sit with it and struggle with it, as opposed to run away from it and push it away, right, and ignore it, which a lot of people do. Like, we all deal with loss differently, but I think it's a great lesson or guidepost for people of how you went through it. You didn't run from it. You sat with it. You dealt with it. Almost celebrates the wrong word, but like, you appreciate it. You appreciate it for what it taught you and how it helped make you into who you are today. It's important to understand, like, right? You're not running away from it. You're grateful for it in a sense.
Yeah. I think in past times I didn't understand grief and I didn't know how to sit with it. But since I've grown older and just had more life experiences, and there's different people in my life now, mentors and friends, I can better understand what it does mean to sit with the grief and to not push it away. Because if you push it away, it just comes back. And I think that's one of the other ways I became a deeper writer, was through those experiences. I was like, yes, the grief somehow opens you up to see all the other areas of life in a deeper way. And I fought my way back to hope through those losses. And I think that's an important theme throughout my book as well, just trying to keep hope alive through each of these seasons. And they're not always easy seasons to go through. And I also think they're kind of a cycle. At some point in life, we're in one of those four seasons.
Yeah. So for people who are struggling, maybe they're not in a position, maybe they've lost hope, or, you know, they're going through a chronic condition that feels like they're never going to get through it. You know, what's mm-hmm. your advice? What's your advice for those people? What can you share that might help them in that process?
Well, my hope would be that they would have somebody that they can reach out to, whether it's a family member, a friend, or a counselor, because I think there are times where we do run out of hope ourselves and we need somebody else to like hold that hope for us and hold that space where we can share from the depths of us, and that person can listen and just be with us. I think just learning to be without forcing yourself to do, if you have that capability in your life, to just be able to like rest. Because I think those times of deep struggle, we don't have a lot of energy for anything else. So I would hope that people have people that can just help them through that time. And to like not be afraid to reach out. And I often tell people who are struggling, like, it's okay if you're not okay for a little while. Like, that is your honest place of where you are. And the hope is that you will get through this with the people that are around you and in your life.
That's well said. It's can you talk a little bit more too? I'd like to hear more about this idea of, you know, longings and love as well, but to have the courage to name, right, the things that you're hoping for, the things that you'd like to do in your life, that does take courage, right? That does take an understanding that I want this and it may not happen, but I have the courage to say this is something that I'm longing for. Can you talk a little bit about what that's been like for you and some of those longings that have come true?
Yeah, I mean, some of them have still not come true, but I think for me, the important part was being able to finally bring them out into the open. And one that always comes to mind, because it's part of what started my journey as well, was when I was turning 30, which was 7 years ago now, I reached that milestone where I thought all my friends are married, and so by 30, I will be married too. But I didn't really know how to talk about it, because as a person with a disability, that topic often feels like it's not addressed as, like, in society as a whole. I always feel like the invisible person during any discussion of love or dating or anything. And I had no clue how to write about it for a long time, how to talk about it. And a few years ago, I finally did a blog series during the month of February about love and the disability factor. I did 4 posts on it because I wrestle with these insecurities about like never being seen as an option for anyone who wants to date me or eventually marry me. So I think even within my friend circle, except for the friends who'd know me since childhood, I didn't really know how to talk about it. No one really asked me. Like, even if you're in the church spaces or just as a single person, as an adult, you're often, I think, if you don't have a disability, people are often asking, oh, who are you dating? Or do you want to be set up with this person? And that has never happened with me. Like, I just get ignored. And so that was always something that was kind of hurtful and frustrating, and I didn't know how to bring it up until my own journey with sitting with my counselor and just addressing all of these things that were just hiding in my heart. And now I do feel more open to talking about them in different ways, even though they're not dreams that have been realized yet. That's one area. And even I live with my parents at the moment, and I went away to college like most everyone else, and I always thought I would live more independently by 30 as well. So that was another dream that just hasn't happened yet for different reasons. And I think learning to live with those unmet dreams is also a part of my journey.
I can relate to a lot of that. For me, what gave me freedom was, at least in terms of, you know, dating and romantic connections, is that I came to a place where I was very clear that if it happened, I would be open to that. And if it didn't happen, I would be okay with that too. Like, it wasn't going to disappoint me. Because in my experience, and I would love your input on this, love is so much more of a bigger concept and bigger thing that we experience than dating somebody or being with somebody romantically. Like, there are so many ways to love, and there are so many ways to connect and appreciate people. And I mean, so I'm not religious, but I do have, you know, very religious or spiritual feelings. And I feel like Christianity, Buddhism, you know, these world religions have given us some really good models for how to think about what love is and the different ways that we can experience it.
Mm-hmm.
But I also think that it is a shame that more people are not open to it, that more people, like you said, kind of just the topic never comes up. And if more people knew you, if more people understood you in those ways, the hope, right, is that more people would be open to that, to experiencing that, because we just, there's just so much more to experience and ways to connect and be with each other than we know and understand. Or, you know, partially it's our media too, right? Our media doesn't show different kinds of relationships. Our media doesn't show different kinds of people interacting in those relationships.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Right. So can you talk a little, so did anything I say resonate? Like, do you agree? Do you disagree? Is there something that I'm missing?
No, I agree. I don't think disability is brought about in the media, and definitely not in the form of relationships, at least not like in a long standing relationship. I always think of the movie Me Before You, or the book. I read the book. I never saw the movie. Did you ever hear about that?
No, but now I want to go read it.
Well, I wrote about it because there was a controversial book and movie a few years ago where the person had a spinal cord injury, I think. I don't know if I should tell the whole ending, but I mean, I guess it's well known now. So the movie ended with the man doing assisted suicide, and the girlfriend at the time, like, she told the man, this is all fiction, of course, but it's a sad picture for the disability community. The lady was like, I love this person, but to me, it was like that lady's love was not enough for the man to choose to live. And that's like sad and not a good reflection, because he was in a wheelchair and he just felt like his life was not worth living. And we don't really need that kind of voice in the world. We need voices that say people with disabilities do have reasons to live and thrive. And I also just think, yeah, we can have struggles with questions, and like, I've faced my own hard questions, but I guess one aspect that can be missing is like the mental health aspect of, if somebody is struggling with their disability or chronic illness, like, it's okay to get some help with your mental health. That's kind of off topic, but I also have connected more in more recent years with people in the disability community that have healthy relationships and healthy marriages, and they're really good models and encouragement to me, and helps me to understand what is possible, because I also just, in my own heart, I didn't fully believe it was possible. And it took me a long time to really believe, like, yeah, one day I could get married, and that is very possible in the world today. I just didn't believe it for myself for a really, really long time.
Yep. I'm glad you do now. I also think it's, I don't know, I just, I have to point out the irony, right, that we have these hopes and dreams of marriage and finding somebody to love. And when you just look at it statistically, like over half of them fail, right?
Yeah.
So it's a double-edged sword, kind of, no matter how you look at it. But yeah, just,
yeah.
Go ahead. I didn't mean to interrupt.
It's like a common struggle for anybody in my age group who is single too. And I think I wrote about it at one point, but I still didn't fully believe it. That was the interesting part. It's I still needed some time and some life experience and just understanding in my own community for me to get to that place where I believed beyond what I originally wrote about love and the disability factor.
And that belief is important. That belief mm-hmm. is what helps make sure that, you know, you are ready, right? Because you could not believe that you deserve another person, and mm-hmm. that other person can come along, and it can end in a really bad way because we weren't ready for that. We weren't accepting mm-hmm. enough of ourselves and our self-worth and who we are to yeah. be, to embrace that relationship in a healthier way. So I think that's beautiful that you're there. And that's something that it's a constant, for me anyways, it's a constant process of remembering and reminding and believing, right? That if the situation comes about that I do deserve it, that I am worthy, and that I am, you know, ready for that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And it's taken different people in my life to just reflect that idea back to me, and I kind of really finally embraced it for myself. And it's similar to what you said earlier, like, I'm okay if it doesn't happen. I will be okay.
I would like to kind of move through now. I think there's this poem, I think, is a good theme for what we talked about. As we transition towards the end here, could you read us "Impossible Is Not a Word"?
Yeah, what page is it on? Let me find it real fast. Oh, here
page
it is.
22.
I found it. Impossible is not a word, not one I often choose. Giving up is unpreferred, for it means to fail, to lose, and that to me is absurd, when I can easily embrace a different view, a new word.
So impossible is not a word you choose.
Mm-hmm.
Let's unpack this poem because it's powerful.
Yeah.
You know, giving up is unpreferred. Why did you use the word unpreferred? You wrote it un-preferred.
Yeah. I think just my whole life I've dealt with obstacles in a way where I'm just always fighting to find a way around them and not really to stop trying to achieve whatever the obstacle might be blocking. So for example, going away to college. I lived on campus. My college was a few hours away from home. And so that was the first time I lived away from home. And I had to set up the caregivers and all of that for 4 years. And that, to people looking on, would seem like an impossible task. And even when I tell that story today, people are amazed that I went to college away from home and I didn't live with my parents during that time. So that would be an example of what seems impossible to others. But to me, I had always said, I'm going to college. My brothers went to college. My friends went to college. I'm going to college. That's what people do. Yeah, so that would be one example.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And for it means to fail, to lose. And that to me is absurd. What is absurd about losing?
I haven't really thought about all of this lately. I guess another aspect would be the idea of reframing different dreams. So the idea of I might not be able to do something on my own because of my disability, but I can invite my community to be a part of a dream. And so that's where, if I'm not giving others an option to be a part of something, that's where it would be absurd, because I would be giving up and not really giving others the chance to be a part of a dream. So an example of that practically or from my own life would be, in a different poem, I talk about some simple dreams that I wish I could do. And one of them is, for example, run a mile, because I watch when my brothers or friends would run races in high school or just go out and run a mile for exercise. And the idea of like of that is something I've never experienced. But a few years ago, a friend invited me to, have you heard of the Team Hoyt across the country?
I have not.
There's a father and his son who started doing marathons and short races where the father would push the son in a jogger type stroller. And so there's a bunch of teams around the country. And our local team, a friend was a part of a local team, and she invited me to start participating in these races where you show up and the team has these jogger strollers. And so the runner pushes the person during the race. And so this lady and I, we did several races, and she would come to my neighborhood and we would practice. And so that was one of those simple dreams where it came to life with the help of a friend. And we even did up to a half marathon one time.
Wow.
So if she hadn't invited me, or if I hadn't really shared interest or anything like that, like none of that would have happened. And those were some really cool experiences.
That's great. That's it shows creativity, vulnerability, asking, right? Mm-hmm. To create new experiences that wouldn't have been possible before. That's beautiful.
Yeah.
Yeah. Is there a poem that you'd like to read? I know there's a lot of them in your book that you think would be important to talk about, that's something that you'd like to say that we haven't said yet in this conversation?
I always end with the title poem called Beyond.
Let's do that.
Okay, that kind of is a really good summary of everything we've discussed. Okay, the title of the poem is Beyond, just like the title of the book. More than you think, beyond what you see, disabled is not my identity. I'm Laura, a person of value, worth, dignity, another member of humanity.
Perfect, and yes, you are. Can you share with the audience, how can people get a hold of you, reach out to you, connect with you? Where can they find you and more about you?
Yeah, I have a blog. It's lauracrobb.com. So people can sign up for the occasional newsletter I send out, and then they can also get the blog post into their email. And as far as social media, I'm probably most active on Instagram, and that is also at lauracrobb. I exist on Facebook and Twitter. So if you just look for Laura C. Robb on Facebook, it would be Laura C. Robb Writer. But I am more active on Instagram and on my blog.
Excellent. I'm really looking forward to staying in touch, to seeing your new writings, your new experiences, and keep sharing, keep living, you're a beautiful human being. I'm so happy we connected, and this has been a terrific conversation. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me. It was great.
Thank you, Laura.
Thank you.